Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 3, Gajendra's Prayers of Surrender, Text 27. Yogarandita karmano vidhi yoga vibhavite yoginam yam prapashyanti yogesham tam natosmyaham. Yoga randita karmanaha. Persons whose reactions to fruitive activities have been burnt up by bhakti yoga. Ridhi, within the core of the heart. Yoga vibhavite, completely purified and clean. Yogina, mystics who are competent. Yam, under the personality of Godhead. Who? Prapaschanti, directly see. Yoga isham, unto that Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Master of all mystic yoga. Tam, unto Him. Nataha, asmi, offering obeisances. Aham, I. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme, the Super Soul, the Master of all mystic yoga, who is seen in the core of the heart by perfect mystics when they are completely purified and freed from the reactions of fruitive activity by practicing bhakti yoga. Purport. The king of elephants, Gajendra, simply accepted that there must be someone who has created this cosmic manifestation and has supplied its ingredients. This should be admitted by everyone, even the most determined atheists. Okay, so if you meet a determined atheist, you should, or a non-devotee, you should tell them, you should admit that there's a God. Why then do the non-devotees and atheists not admit this? Now we'll find out why. Why you may be unsuccessful when you demand that an atheist and a non-devotee admit that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One must be freed from all the dirt accumulated within the heart due to fruitive activities, performed one after another. One must wash off this dirt by practicing bhakti yoga. So you can tell an atheist or a non-devotee that the reason why you're an atheist or a non-devotee is because you don't practice bhakti yoga. So if you want to become a devotee, then you have to practice bhakti yoga, or else you'll remain a non-devotee or an atheist. Yoga randita karmanaha. As long as one is covered by material modes of nature, of ignorance and passion, there is no possibility of understanding the Supreme Lord. Tada rajastamo bhava kama loba dayashchaye. When one is freed from the modes of ignorance and passion, one becomes free from the lowest qualities, kama and loba, lust and greed. Nowadays, there are many yoga schools to encourage people in developing their lusty desires and greed through the practice of yoga. People are therefore very much fond of so-called yoga practice. The actual practice of yoga, however, is described here as authoritatively stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.1. Dhyanavastita tagatena manasa pashanti yam yoginaha. A yogi who is always A yogi is one who always meditates on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is also confirmed in the Brahma Samhita 5:38. Premanjana Chrita Bhakti Valochanena Santak Sadaiva Rideye Shivalokayanti Yam Shaima Sundarama Chintya Guna Swarupam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shyama Sundar, Krishna himself, with inconceivable, innumerable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their hearts of hearts with the eye of devotion tinged with the salve of love. The bhakti yogi constantly sees Shyama Sundara, beautiful Lord Krishna, with his blackish bodily hue. Because the king of the elephants, Gajendra, thought himself an ordinary animal, he thought himself unfit to see the Lord. In his humility, he thought that he could not practice yoga. In other words, how can those who are like animals in the bodily concept of life and who have no purity of consciousness practice yoga? In the present day, people have no control over their senses, who have no understanding of philosophy and do not follow religious principles or rules and regulations, are nonetheless pretending to be yogis. This is the greatest anomaly in the practice of mystic yoga. Yoga randita karmano riddhi yoga vibhavite yoginam yama pashanti yogesham tam natos miham. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme, the Supersoul, the Master of all mystic yoga, who is seen in the core of the heart by the perfect mystics when they are completely purified and freed from the reactions of fruitive activity by practicing bhakti yoga. So again, in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna had stated, Shreya Swadamo Viguna Paradharmat Svanustitat Shredharame Nidharam Shreyak Paradharmo Bhyavaha. That it is better to perform one's own prescribed duty than perform someone else's duty. It is better to perform one's own duty, even imperfectly, than to perform someone else's duty. Destruction in the course of one's own duty is better because to take up someone else's duty is dangerous. So duty means what we're supposed to do. And what we're supposed to do, we're supposed to do something to raise ourselves from one level of consciousness to the next. All the duties of varnashram and devotional service are all meant to bring one from one stage of consciousness to the next. Otherwise, it's called shrama eva hi kevalam. It's a waste of time. Or in the words of the Nectar of Instruction, it's prayasas. It's simply useless endeavor. Atiyahara. The reason why we don't do our duty is the same reason why Satya Yuga turned into Treta Yuga. And why Treta Yuga turns into Dwarpa Yuga. It's not just that there's a clock called, and then it goes around, oh, it's time for Satya Yuga, now it's time for Treta Yuga. No, it's the consciousness of the living entities that turn one yuga to the next yuga. It's the degradation of the consciousness. And that's caused by what? It's caused by lust. So everyone's elevation or degradation in consciousness, the center point is lust. If one is able to tolerate lust and check the force of desire and anger, as Krishna says in the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, kama shakno dihaiva yakshodum praksharira vimokshanat kama krodo bhavan vegam suyukta sa sukhinara. That before giving up this present body, in other words, Krishna is advising Arjuna, don't wait till the last minute and hope everything's going to turn out all right. That somehow or another, by the mercy of my spiritual master, because I'm such a nice devotee, all though I never really practiced so seriously, that he promised he'd take me back to Godhead, and therefore at the last moment I really become serious. Now, that won't work. Krishna says, before giving up this present body, if one is able to check the force of desire, actually, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the senses. So there's only two things we're concerned about. Well, we're concerned about a lot of things, but there's only two things we should be concerned about. One of them is tolerance. Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, my dear Arjuna, you're actually eternal. And Arjuna says, well, I'm eternal, but still, and everyone's eternal, but still it's going to be very unpleasant to kill all my relatives. Krishna says, yes, it'll be unpleasant, because that's the nature of material consciousness. So even if you understand that you're eternal, still the material body and the mind will become disturbed when you kill your relatives because of strong material affection. Therefore, you have to learn how to tolerate. So tolerate what? Tolerate the urge of the senses. And what are the senses trying to do is, they're telling us to gratify desire and anger. So if one is able to do those two things, tolerate the urge of the senses and check the force of desire and anger, then he's a yogi and he is considered to be well situated in this world. So our philosophy, we're not trying to teach millions of different things, we're trying to teach two things. Tolerate the urge of the senses and check the force of desire and anger. Now in order to do that, Krishna says, well, he'll say many different ways in Bhagavad Gita, and in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But if we follow the sequence, and Arjuna says, well, what's the problem? Why is it that I know what my I know it will actually elevate me, but I don't do it. I do something that will degrade me. So Krishna says, because you're under the spell of lust, and that will turn into anger. If you gratify your lust, it'll turn into greed. And if you don't, then it'll turn into anger. Either way, you either become greedy or angry. And if you become greedy, eventually you'll become frustrated when you lose everything. And you'll become angry. So Krishna doesn't even bother to include greed, because greed always winds up into becoming anger anyhow. So if you want to be lusty and gratify lusty desires, at the same time not get frustrated, that's not possible. And then Krishna explains two very basic principles of material consciousness. Dumena vriyate vanir, itardara shomalena cha, itobena vritas karvas, itatenenam avritam. So the reason why we don't see reality, we don't experience reality, we don't hear things properly, we don't see things properly, we don't smell things properly, we don't touch things properly, we don't taste things properly, is because we're covered by lust. It's an energy, kama. And it may have transformed itself into lust, greed, anger. And certainly it's transformed itself into delusion because we believe we're this body. So lust has the power to cover us. And that delusion means that we don't see things properly. We identify ourselves to one degree or another with these gross and subtle material bodies. And then, of course, as we feed illusion and anger, lust, anger, greed, as we work, as Krishna says, pranashati, as we go on and in the cycle of feeding lust, anger, greed, delusion, forgetting memory and loss of intelligence, then it turns into other things like moha, and I guess moha is illusion. It turns into mada, which is madness, and envy, and matsara. So, if we're not satisfied with our present state of illusion, we can work in the material world seriously to satisfy even more our lusty desires, leave them unchecked, try to satisfy them either in the mind or the senses, and then it'll eventually turn into madness and we'll become a normal citizen of this world. like everyone else, we can become crazy. And the symptom of becoming the most crazy is that we're simply walking around envious of everyone, of all living entities. We're simply envious. And eventually we become envious of even our own selves. On the other hand, the covering of the material nature, as mentioned, doesn't stop with simply being deluded. Aritam jnana etena jnaneno nityavarena kama rupena kuntiya dusprena analena cha. That's a man's pure consciousness. In other words, we have pure consciousness, as it says in the, I don't even know where it says it, but anyhow, that nitya siddha krishna prema sadhu kavi no, it must be Chaitanya Charitamrita at least. Nitya siddha prema, that everyone is actually eternally liberated. Nitya siddha, what is that? Krishna prema, sada kabanoi, shravanadi, shuddha chitte, karya udoy. So here is the remedy to hear reality and to take it seriously. And what is that taking it seriously? To take it seriously, to check the force of desire and anger, to tolerate the urges of the senses. So that's our first business. Of course, it's made easier if we're Krishna conscious. Just like we're sitting there taking prasadam, and somehow or another there's an extra samosa that's on my plate. And I've already had a good number of them, and I know it's not going to go well if I eat another one. But my senses are saying, oh, come on, it's prasadam. You know, it's spiritual. The Prabhupada said, you should eat so much you should waddle like a duck afterwards. So this is good, it's spiritual, it'll purify you. So, we're faced with a dilemma. Should I actually, who's directing me? Is my mind giving me a quote from the Bhagavad Gita? Or is it urging me to fulfill the desires of the senses? So should I check it or should I not check it? So checking it, if actually there's no more room left, then that's considered to be Krishna conscious. Otherwise, if there's enough room left and you can eat the samosa, that's also if you eat it in that consciousness. But one should have some intelligence to check if there's any room. That requires some intelligence. You don't have to go to the university to get that intelligence. Although if you go to the university, you probably lose that intelligence. And then, if you have that intelligence, then you can tolerate the urge of the senses and check the force of desire and anger. But the senses are there, they're going to urge us. And if we think, well, you know, if it feels good, then do it. And that if I check my senses, I'll be repressing them and I'll get psychological problems. And if I get sick and have a stomach ache, can't sleep at night and get diarrhea, then I'll be perfectly normal like everyone else. I won't get any psychological problems afterwards. I'll just get physical problems, that's all. So, check the avritam jnana etena. So one is able to, avritam jnana etena, that's a man's pure consciousness is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied. In other words, even when we try to satisfy lust, it will not become satisfied anyhow. It will simply turn into greed. Now we may engage lust in Krishna's service, but because Krishna is there, then the lust won't to the extent that Krishna is there, then the lust won't disturb us because we'll be in Krishna consciousness. We'll be aware that just like if you check your, you're driving down the street and you check your gas gauge and it says you're out of gas, then it, you're not being impelled by lust in order to fill up the tank because you're detached. You know it's, in order to get the vehicle working properly, you have to fill up the tank. So if lust signals to us that it's, we have to do something like eat, but if we're doing it in Krishna consciousness, then it won't disturb us. As a matter of fact, it'll be blissful because we're doing it for Krishna. And the more we eat in that consciousness, the more we absorb our mind in Krishna rather than in the gratifying the senses. Therefore, Savayamana Krishna, Padara Vindayo, Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanu Varnade. Therefore, Ambarish Maharaj, he didn't stop and sit in a corner and try to control his senses. He controlled them by Savayamana Krishna, Padara Vindayo. First of all, he put his mind upon Krishna. Because that's the whole object. Everything else is aid that. If Krishna is not there, then we're wasting our time. And if Krishna is there, then what we're doing will be fruitful. Spiritually elevated. So Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindaye. So we're hearing that our first business is put our mind upon Krishna. And if we hear that enough, maybe we'll even try and put our mind on Krishna. So hearing may be the first principle, but what we're hearing about is how to put the mind upon Krishna. Maybe by proper activity, which is called Shravanam, and proper Shravanam Kirtanam. Kirtanam means proper activity and proper recitation of those activities, which are not really none different, because sound vibration is spiritual sound vibration, or spiritual activities are the same. And that should lead to memory, remembering Krishna specifically, actually thinking about Krishna. Dhyana Avastita, as Prabhupada said, a real yogi is one who's meditating on Krishna. So if we're actually practicing yoga, Krishna must be there, or else it's not yoga, it's something else. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yujacha mayarpita manobudhira mame vaishatya samshaya. So Krishna keeps on saying the same thing over and over again, so if we actually believe him, that he's an honest person, he's not just, you know, throwing out instructions because he wants to keep Arjuna awake. No, he says, Tasmat Sarveshu, in all activities, Tasmat Sarveshu, Kalishu, every time, everywhere, all time, Mamanus, you should think of me. And how to do that? And carry out your prescribed duty of fighting. With your mind and intelligence fixed on me, and everything engaged in me, you'll attain to me without doubt. So it's not just doing things, it's also thinking about Krishna. Thinking about doing them to please Krishna. Hanusmara. Then you'll attain to Krishna without doubt. If we keep on just doing things, and Krishna's not there, then that's what we'll do. We'll just get another opportunity to come back and do more things. Now, Krishna says, what's the problem? Arjuna says that I'm being forced. Avritam Gyanate. That's a man's pure consciousness. It's covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfying, which burns like fire. So what's the solution? Well, Krishna first of all says, Prabhupada says in the purport to the next verse, Indriyani Manobudir Astyadishtanam Uchate Eteravimohatyatyaitasha Gyanam Ariti Dehinam. The senses, the mind, the intelligence are the sitting places of lust, which veils the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So again, that we're bewildered by lust and it's impelling us to do different things. So Prabhupada advises us in the purport that we should see where our enemy is situated so we know how to deal with the enemy. If we don't know where the enemy is and how it's acting, we won't know how to deal with it. And therefore, in that purport, Prabhupada gives us a detailed description of how to deal with lust, where it's situated. And the first thing, how does it get in? It gets in by hearing. Hearing the glories or watching the glories of materialistic sense gratification in different varieties. The whole world is full of come and enjoy in different ways. And therefore, when we observe or we hear about these things, then the mind becomes a reservoir of all desires for sense gratification. And naturally, they're aimed at certain senses, the tongue especially, the belly and the genitals. Come and enjoy, come and enjoy. And of course, when the tongue, belly, and genitals are involved, then also anger will be involved, the mind will be involved, and eventually words will be involved too. They'll all be pushing us. So the first thing is hearing about the glories of something, the mind, absorbing the mind in those things, just like we find it easier generally as conditioned souls to absorb our mind in sense gratification than to absorb it in Krishna, because we have a taste for sense gratification. But if we try to avoid absorbing the mind in objects of the senses, and then we make some progress. But anyhow, the conditioned soul will generally absorb the mind in the in some kind of object of the senses by hearing or observing, which is not really so much different. Because when we look at something, we're actually hearing. We can't see anything without our intelligence speaking to us and telling us what we're seeing. So hearing, seeing, more or less, they're quite similar to each other. And then the senses become the repository of all kinds of lusty desires. Because that's what we're hearing, that's what we're seeing, how to gratify our senses. They've created shops, the modern world, full of objects of the senses for everyone. The internet, you can surf the internet and see which object you want to, which object of the sense you're interested in today. Or in this moment. And then the soul, if it's in Maya, which it is usually, in the material world at least, then it has to figure out, how am I going to get these objects to gratify my senses? And that takes intelligence. So when the soul decides to use its intelligence to utilize its, to perform activities with its senses and mind to gratify its senses, then Maya provides a false ego in order to make it seem realistic. Otherwise, it would be, if we didn't have this false ego, it would seem like a waste of time. We'd realize that we're just wasting our time. But Maya gives us a false ego, and when we act according to the false ego gets strengthened. And our real ego, our spiritual consciousness, goes further away. And therefore, lusty intelligence influences the soul to acquire a false ego by which it identifies itself with the mind and senses for sense gratification, more or less in the same way that any animal does. So what's the solution? Tasma tvam indriyanya ado niyamya bharatarshava papmanam prajihiyenam jnana vijnana nashana. Therefore, in the very beginning, Arjuna, curb this great simplest sin by regulating the senses, savayamana Krishna Vidara Vindayo. Follow Ambarish Maharaj's example or other great devotees' example and put the mind on Krishna. That's called regulating the mind. When the mind's in Krishna consciousness, then it's considered to be controlled. And when the savayamana Krishna Vidara Vaikuntha Gunanuvartine, and when it's glorifying Krishna, it's said to be controlled. Karohara Mandara Marjanar Dishu, and when it's cleaning the temple with the hands are said to be controlled. Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanuvartine, Karohara Mandira Marjanar Dishu, Shuta Chukta Tatkarodai. So all these things engage. Ambarish Maharaj smelled the flowers offered to Krishna, touched the bodies of the devotees, saw the beautiful form of the deities with his eyes. So this is considered to be controlling the senses. Rishikesha Rishikena Sevaya Bhakti Uchite. When Rishikesh takes charge of our senses, then they're actually we're in our real state of being. We're actually being influenced by Krishna and by reality, and therefore the controller of everything is actually, we're actually controlling the senses. Or Krishna is controlling the senses. When we let Krishna control the senses, then our spiritual senses will be controlled by Krishna, and we won't be controlled by the illusory energy. Tasmatvam indriyanya niyamya bharatara shiva. Niyamya, Krishna's directions. Papmanam pratihiyenam. Then this papa, this desire for sinful desires, will go away. Jnanam vijnana nashanam, which are destroying our real knowledge and our experience of Krishna consciousness. So if we indriyani manobudirasya dishtanam uchite etari vimohat yatyesha jnanam avriti, Indriyani manobudir asyadishtam uchite etari vimohat yatyesham jnanam vijnanam jnanam avriti dehinam. That's not right either. One more time. Indriyanam manobudir asyadishtanam uchite etari vimohat yatyesha. Is that right? Indriyani paranyahur indriyebhi paramanat manasastu parabudir yo bude paratastu saha. The working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is higher than the mind. And he, the soul, is even higher than intelligence. So it all depends upon our determination to do the right thing, to perform devotional service. And that will depend upon our knowing what to do, our remembering what to do, which would depend upon our hearing about Krishna and not hearing about other things. Or if we hear things and we utilize them in Krishna's service, that may be a different thing. Therefore, Krishna concludes the chapter by saying, evam bude puram budva samstavyatmanamatmana tihi shatru mahabaho kamarupam durashitam. Therefore, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind, and intelligence, one should control the lower self by the higher, and thus by spiritual strength, conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. So in other words, when we identify ourselves as spirit and take shelter of Krishna, then we'll get the power to conquer over lust and all its corollaries. And if we don't, then we won't be able to do it in the long run. Only by, first of all, understanding what our objective is, to please Krishna through devotional service, and therefore taking shelter of him, becoming conscious of him. When we do that, then we can conquer over lust, anger, greed. And when we don't, then there are spaces in our devotional service, or holes in our devotional service, or canyons, depending on how, what we're doing. Therefore, the last verse is, Sattva Nirupa Sarvasha, Shada Bhavati Bharata, Shada Mayo Yam Purusho, Yo Yat Shada Seva Saha. Then the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, verse number 3, Krishna says, Sattva Nirupa Sarvasha, that according to one's existence under the three modes of material nature, one has a particular kind of faith. So we've gotten this body, we have this mind, we have this contaminated intelligence, we have this false ego, and we actually believe we know things. We actually know what's going on. And Krishna is speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. When Arjuna is in the right mood, but he's willing to find out what's actually going on, and he admits he doesn't know what's going on, because if he knew what was going on, he'd be happy. He knew how to be happy. But Arjuna's miserable. So when we admit that we don't know what's going on, we take shelter of Krishna and ask him what's going on, then we can, even though we see right now, according to our conditioned nature, but still we can develop another vision beyond this particular consciousness that we have, because Krishna can give us the Dhammi Buddhi Yogam Tam. He can tell us what's going on. Even though we may not see it clearly, but he can tell us this is what's actually going on, although you may not see it. We may not see the sun when it's coming up in the morning, but when we see the sunlight, then we can understand the presence of the sun. Sadvana rupa sarvash shara bhavati bharata sharoma yo yo purusham yo yat sharasam eva saha. And then when we have a particular conception, then if we act according to that perception, then another faith will develop. If we act according to the lower modes, then we'll get a lower conception, a lower experience. And we act according to Krishna's directions or the higher modes in Varnashram Dharma, which should include Krishna also, then we'll get a higher conception. So if we act in the modes of passion, then we'll wind up in ignorance eventually. We'll become attracted by ignorance. And if we act in the mode of goodness, or we act in passion to achieve goodness by utilizing things in Krishna's service, following his directions, then eventually we'll wind up in goodness and we'll be able to see things properly, and then eventually we'll actually accept pure devotional service and give up the lower modes of nature. So that's our choice. We may not see things properly now, but if we take shelter of higher authority and then work according to that higher authority, then eventually our vision will change. We'll see things properly, and eventually we'll understand that there's no goal in life save and except act in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. And then our life will become perfect. But that may take many births and deaths if we're not serious. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
You mentioned that quote about being envious of one's own self. What does it mean to be envious of one's own self?
I'm just repeating what Krishna says. 17th chapter, Divisions of Faith.
16, 18.
What's that?
Verse 18.
One becomes envious of the Supreme Lord situated in his own body and the bodies of others, and blasphemes against the real religion.
Chapter 16, verse 18.
Chapter what?
16, 18.
Chapter 17, text number 6. Karshanyatak shriristam bhutagramam chetasa mam chaivanta shriristam tad vidyasram nishchayam. Thus, those who undergo severe austerities and penances not recommended in the scriptures, performing them out of pride and egoism, who are upheld by lust and anger, and are foolish, and who torture the element, material elements of the body as well as the super soul dwelling within. Oh, that's our dwelling within. That's it. Bewildered by false ego, strength, pride, lust, and anger, the demons become envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in their own bodies and the bodies of others, and blaspheming against the real religion. A demonic person, being always against God's supremacy, does not like to believe in the scriptures. He is envious of both the scriptures and the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Be
envious of the scriptures and the scriptures, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He does not know that the present life is a preparation for the next life. Not knowing this, he is actually envious of his own self as well as others. Well, if you out of spite, you do the wrong thing, then you suffer. So, if someone says you're eternal, you should do this, and you become happy, and you say, no way, I'm going to serve my body. Then you're envious of even the idea that you're eternal, you're who you actually are. You're envious of your own self. Therefore, being envious of your own self, you just do things which is going to put yourself into greater and greater difficulty.
It's like a lot of rebellious teenagers act enviously of their own selves in the long run.
Maybe. Could be. You don't have to be a teenager to be envious of your own self. The real self. Someone talks about God, you become envious. Someone talks about you're eternal, you become envious. You become angry, why are you talking such nonsense? I am this body. Anything else? Yes.
Also, why... in the first verse of the Upadeshamrita Rupa Goswami is quoting Jiva Vegam, Manasa Krodha Vegam. So there is Manasa and Krodha Vegam. Anger, he mentions the urge of anger and the urges of the mind. So isn't anger an urge of the mind? Is it one of the... Why does he have to specify just one of the urges of many possible urges of the mind?
Well, the mind comes up with ideas, is thinking, feeling, and willing. So you can think about something, that's also sense gratification. Maybe absolutely no anger or anything else, you're just thinking about it. Then feeling, when you feel about it, it gets more intense. And then there's, you know, then you start realizing what you're actually thinking about more intimately. And then you may will to deal with that with your senses. So anger is a specific manifestation. It goes through the eyes, has physical manifestations to it. Especially at different, as the thinking gets more intense and the feeling and the willing, then it has different, it has a very unique set of physical and emotional and mental qualities to it. And the mind, you can just be thinking of anything. You think of smelling flowers or whatever. It may have its different set of, but you know, generally speaking, if you're smelling a flower, it's not so obvious exactly what the mind is going through is anger.
Can you say that it's the extreme extreme of the mind's urges and the most destructive one?
Yeah, it's lust also, as vented through the senses, which will be explained. So the mind is always the controlling factor. But as soon as we think, and we let our thinking wander here and there, then it starts getting to the realm of feeling, and then willing, and then these other things become obvious, become manifested in varieties. So yes, the mind is always a central point of control of spiritual life. But we can think and think and think, and not, just like people meditate, they think they're going to go somewhere. They're not angry. They're not lusty. They're not trying to gratify, but they're just, it's another kind of sense gratification. Anything else?
There is some questions from our auditor, right?
There are some. Okay. Some say that in the Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema shloka, it is not the jiva who is eternally perfect, but Krishna Prema. How to respond to this argument?
Krishna Prema is perfect. How to respond to that? I don't even know if it's an argument. Yeah. There's no such thing as, you know, it's the jiva who has prema.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that prema exists. There's no, there may be personified prema, Mahabhava and Shrimadara, right? But she's a person also. We don't have prema outside of people.
It is a popular school that we don't have any prema. We have to go to the certain group of people and get it from them.
Well, we don't. We get everything comes from Krishna. So it's dormant. The ability to experience prema is dormant. Just like the ability of iron to be attracted by a magnet is inherently there. But when it's rusty, you don't have to change the magnet. You don't have to change the iron. You just have to take off the dust, the rust, and then it automatically becomes attracted. So our attraction to Krishna is normal. But when we're covered by rust, the rust of materialism, then it appears that it's not there. But it's always there. You just have to take the rust off, and then the magnet, the iron will be attracted to the magnet.
There are some two questions from Suhotra Maharaja, based on Suhotra Maharaja's.
I'm sure it's not from Suhotra Maharaja. Okay.
About the mind, Suhotra Maharaja wrote, the functions of the material mind, are not outer manifestations of an internally functioning spiritual mind. Our spiritual mind is not functioning now.
No, of course it's always functioning. Otherwise, we wouldn't be perceiving anything if our material mind wasn't functioning. It's just being filtered through the material mind, that's all. And when we hear the words Krishna, that's not material. If we're hearing it from the right source, with the right attitude, then our material mind becomes spiritualized. So it's just like when you put the iron into the fire, it becomes hotter and hotter. So our material mind can also become spiritualized also. And then it acts like the spiritual mind. And there's no difference between our spiritual mind and our material mind. And we're properly situated. Is that it?
And another statement by Sahodara Maharaj, the material mind is mechanically operating within that glare of impersonal consciousness. The question is, mechanically operating, I only heard from the atheists. How the mind can mechanically operate, even robots operate by operator.
Of course, there's always operator. Maya is the operator. And Krishna is directing the operator. Because he's the one who's the super soul. He knows what our karma is.